Blog Talk Radio.
Special technique. Special technique of shadow boxing.
Boxing Source Radio Show. Whoa. And this is your host, James Bell, here. I am here live on Blog Talk Radio. The number to dial in is 347-237-5539. Once again, 347-237-5539. Press the one key to get on queue. You'll be able to talk in live on the show. Once again, I'm your host here on the MRN Broadcasting Channel. And we have a couple of commercials here that we're going to go through. So let me just get on that. And then we will get into the boxing talk here in just a minute. You are listening to the Boxing Source Radio Show here live on the MRN Broadcasting Channel on Blog Talk Radio.
Football talk like you've never heard it before. Possibly one of the funniest podcasts in sports today. That's right, the CMT Firestorm Football Talk Show every Wednesday night at 8:30 p.m. right here on Blog Talk Radio. We have Cali Mike, Chi-Town, Carcel Mathis, and the Mouth of the South, Tony Watley. They give you a different perspective of football that may not be found anywhere else. You may also catch the callers with some classic lines as well.
Here's the blackout level.
What is it?
I don't know. I don't know exactly what it is off the top of my head.
Okay, I know you're in front of your computer right now. Look it up.
I'm about to look it up right now, all right?
National blackout level.
I never said national blackout level, liar.
Yes, you did.
No, I didn't.
Okay, Florida blackout level. Whatever blackout level you want to look up, look it up.
You can't compare a fifth-year quarterback to a 20-year quarterback. How do you compare Cam Newton to Peyton Manning? That's impossible.
I don't even think Cam Newton's going to get a contract extension.
Tampa Bay Buccaneers are the worst franchise in the National Football League. The worst franchise in the National Football League.
The difference between Jameis Winston, Matt Ryan, and Cam Newton is Jameis Winston has the ability to lead a team to a championship.
Once again, people, the CMT Firestone Football Talk Show every Wednesday night on the MRN Broadcast Network.
Jameis Winston is just stupid.
All right, we are back here live on Blog Talk Radio here with the Boxing Source Radio Show. The number to dial in is 347-237-5539. Once again, the area code is 347. The number is 237-5539. Press one key to get on cue, be able to talk live on the show. All right, pretty much here doing the show from a distant location this time. I know we had a big fight up here over in Las Vegas at the first, the new T-Mobile Arena. And that fight card was basically highlighted by the middleweight championship fight between Amir Khan and the WBC and lineal middleweight champion, Saul Canelo Alvarez. Of course, a lot of us knew about this fight here for a while, and that Canelo Alvarez is challenging Amir Khan, who came up from the welterweight division, who actually had about a few fights in the welterweight division before or after being in the light welterweight division of the 140-pound division. And after those few fights that he had at welterweight, he saw an opportunity here with one of the most popular boxers out there in the sport today in Canelo Alvarez, and said, why not take a chance here against him? And see if he could get a shot to win the middleweight championship. And so went on ahead and went for that. And we had a fight here that was at a pretty much a proposed and accepted catch weight of 155 pounds. And both of those guys were able to get to 155 pounds at the weigh-in on Friday. And so he went on ahead with the fight, and looked like Amir Khan was trying to execute what he wanted to execute, was try to keep distance from Canelo Alvarez, stay away from Canelo Alvarez's power, and so on and so forth, try to limit any type of inside game, as Canelo Alvarez was pretty much the one that was coming forward for most of this fight. So with that being known, he's trying to, you know, get a couple of, you know, punches in here and there, try to execute some combos from a distance and stick it and move away from Alvarez to try to, you know, confuse him, you know, up to a certain point. But even then, looked like Alvarez was still able to connect on, you know, a couple of, you know, punches combinations, even though Amir Khan in the first few rounds was able to succeed with the combinations. And it just looked like, you know, Amir Khan was basically trying to do, like I said, that stick and move approach. And then what Alvarez was basically doing pretty much the most of the fight, he was setting up Amir Khan for the right hand. He had you know, basically a jab and then turned around and, you know, gave him a right hand. So lead with the jab, come with the right hand. Lead with the jab, come with the right hand. And then came up to the sixth round. And from that sixth round, Hold on just a moment. Let me see if something's going on here. Right. Let me see here. It looks like back on the scene. We had some connection issues going on here. So pretty much back on here live on Boxing Source Radio show. Like I said, pretty much doing this from a distant location. So it's kind of looking like it's, you know, seeming to be a little bit, maybe a little bit more difficult to try to pull off this show. Here from start to finish. Pretty much gonna see how much this is going on here, how long this is gonna go for. So probably gonna do this show here for, you know, pretty much the basic 60 minutes, but we have like about another 45 minutes or so left on the show to see if it can we can carry over. But it was like I was saying about this fight, middleweight championship fight between Canelo Alvarez and Amir Khan. We were going about what was happening there in the sixth round, and there, like I was saying, Canelo was setting up the right hand for most of the fight. He was, you know, hitting with the left and came again with the right. Hitting with the left, come again with the right. And, what he was doing there was he was setting up the right hand because it looked like he was seeing that Amir Khan was going to be having issues with that right hand coming from Canelo Alvarez. And so what happened was in the sixth round, he was able to set up the right hand by feinting with the left. He feinted the left jab going down low to Amir Khan's body. And from there, he caused Amir Khan to drop his guard. And once he dropped his guard, Canelo came with the right hand up to Amir Khan's jaw and pretty much crushed him. And Amir Khan was basically out from that point, went straight to the ground, and then was pretty much called out on the mat by Kenny Bayless. And about, I think that was 2 minutes in to the sixth round. He was able to score the KO victory there with the right hand to the chin there, and basically scored the win, which was pretty much expected by everybody once this fight was announced. And so Canelo Alvarez pretty much improves his record
out there. I think this makes him rack up, you know, his wins. Yeah, I think that was his 47th win. I mean, so he goes to 47-1 with one draw and scored his 33rd knockout of his career by taking out Canelo Alvarez there. So he's able to retain the WBC and lineal middleweight championships there, and is able to earn $3.5 million for the fight, according to Dan Rafael of the ESPN Sports. And Khan, who was a loser, although it seemed like, you know, it seemed like he was in real trouble there, because he was pretty much out before he even hit the canvas and actually had hit his head on the mat. It got checked out, you know, for, you know, concussions and any other things there with issues. And as of, I think it was pretty much late last night, it was pretty much okay. So the thing was there, Canelo Alvarez on the scorecards up to the sixth round, which was like through five rounds, was up on two scorecards, at the 49-46 scorecard and a 48-47 scorecard. I would say that's a 4-1 and a 3-2, while Khan was ahead 3-2 on the other scorecard. Like I said, it was pretty much that, you know, Khan was trying to execute a strategy of staying to the outside of Canelo Alvarez and try to outbox him. I mean, you've had a couple of an instance where, you know, we tried to see how Mayweather pretty much kind of confused Canelo Alvarez, pretty much counterpunching him a lot and, you know, getting off his jab first and foremost to make Canelo reset his stance. And up to a certain extent, Arislandi Lara was doing the same thing to Canelo. And so Amir Khan was seeing if he could try to execute that same thing there and get that done in order to have success within the fight. So that didn't end up happening there for him. But it seemed like he was able to get as far as he did up to the sixth round. Me personally, I did not think that Amir Khan would be able to last four rounds in this fight. I thought he was going to be in real trouble there, and I thought that even though he had, you know, some type of, you know, boxing skill up to a point, I didn't think that it was going to be enough to at least try to get to the scorecards, get to the decision, you know, be able to get out of this fight. And so, in that instance, we pretty much saw what we expected out of this particular fight there. So, once again, you had Saul Canelo Alvarez defeating Amir Khan by a knockout in the sixth round to retain the WBC and lineal middleweight championships, and also the Ring Magazine middleweight championship, as all of that carried over from the lineage going as far back as Sergio Martinez, and then Miguel Cotto defeated Sergio Martinez, and then Canelo Alvarez defeated Miguel Cotto, so he is currently the lineal middleweight champion. And so after this win by Canelo Alvarez, he pretty much was asked about Gennady Golovkin after the fight, and he said that he is pretty much ready for Gennady Golovkin, but we'll see about that. Just checking in, seeing if this could go through. We got area code 2021. What's going on with you?
Hey, what's going on? It's World Rank.
Hey, what's going on, World Rank?
Nothing much. I caught the end of what you were just now talking about in terms of the lineage of the middleweight crown. What were you talking about before that?
Like I was saying, like over the results of the Canelo Khan fight, with Canelo winning there and retaining the WBC and lineal middleweight championships. So he's going to like pretty much move on to a potential fight in the fall with Gennady Golovkin. He says he's ready, but I pretty much doubt it because of Oscar De La Hoya. Because I think Oscar De La Hoya pretty much had that original idea of not facing or having Canelo Alvarez face Gennady Golovkin until 2017, and I think he's really set on that. Before I get your response in about it, we got area code 205, so 205, check in real quick.
What's going on, James? It's Mike Brady, man. How you doing?
Doing okay there, Brother Mike, doing okay. Yeah, just chilling out here in the distant location, quote unquote. You may have seen where I've pretty much been at over the weekend, so I'm pretty much, you know, still here until Monday. So trying to, you know, get through this show here and you know, pretty much talk about that Canelo Khan fight. You know, pretty much like went over the results of it. So I'm going to start off with World Rank with his thoughts about it and the aftermath, and then I'll get to you, Mike, afterwards. So go ahead, World Rank.
All right, so I don't talk more. I just don't talk more about the in-ring stuff. I'm more so the out-ring stuff. So I want to not necessarily, you know, how my feelings are with Canelo in this fight.
Right.
But just to some of the stuff relegated to some of the post-fight stuff. So I'm going to talk about Canelo and what he said in terms of not running or not being scared or whatever he said. You know, he's going to say that at the end of the fight because there's a lot of pressure put on him now to fight Triple G. So, of course, he's not going to say, oh, I don't want that fight, or say anything to try to deter people to think that he wants to fight. He probably does. I don't.
Right.
I'm not gonna question the man's ability to be scared or not scared. I don't think he is. But I think they know that they have a lot to lose if they lose that fight. There's a lot of people, you know, there's a lot of people saying that it wasn't Virgil Hunter or Khan's place to say that Canelo should take that fight. I don't know if that's their place or not, but I thought it was a good platform to have, you know, other people speak on the behalf of Triple G and say that that fight needs to be made. And now I'm hearing things about the 155 and, you know, things of that nature. And I just feel like, if you're the middleweight champion, you're as good as, you know, people making you out to be, then you shouldn't have restrictions on these guys. You should fight the best, and there shouldn't be no restrictions on that. So, was it their place to call, you know, to call that at that time? I don't know. But it's good that, you know, other people see that these fights need to be made and there shouldn't be, you know, any excuses. Take nothing away from Canelo, but he did what he's supposed to do. You know, to me, that's pretty much it.
Yeah, I think that was also good, too, that, you know, Virgil Hunter pretty much had his, you know, insight about the status of the lineal middleweight championship and the WBC championship. I mean, you have Gennady Golovkin that's been the WBC interim champion for a long time now. And whether it's been Miguel Cotto or Canelo Alvarez, there's been, you know, both of those guys and their teams have, you know, put up money in order to delay a fight with Gennady Golovkin. And so here it's pretty much like an ultimatum coming from, you know, other people within the sport. And now it seems like, you know, if I'm not mistaken, that the WBC was in the process of ordering that particular fight to happen, or Canelo ends up giving away the WBC middleweight championship. All right, so real quick, Mike Grady, what you got to say on the fight and the aftermath?
So I'm going to speak on Virgil Hunter's part before I forget. So I think his stance on the fight came from one of like a protector, father figure of his fighter. You know, it was pretty much like, yeah, my fighter lost, you know, but at least he took a risk, you know, like, you guys, it's your turn to take a risk. So I don't think he necessarily cared per se, like, what happened, you know, after the fight, but I just think his comments came from the place of just saying that, you know, yeah, my fighter came up short, but, you know, he still took a risk, and that's, you know, he should be commended. So I think that was like the father figure trainer in him saying all that stuff. As far as the fight, I mean, I think Khan started off pretty strong. That first right hand that he landed on Canelo, I was like, okay. And, you know, it definitely got Canelo's attention. But, you know, after them first couple rounds he won, you could kind of see the momentum kind of fading away from him. So, you know, I didn't think it was going to happen like that, but, you know, I saw pretty much the wheel slipping from Khan, you know, as Canelo kind of settled down, he started going to the body a little bit more, and then his punches kept getting closer and closer. Like, it was one punch that he landed, like, right on the left chest, left pectoral of Khan. I was like, damn, this man getting closer and closer. And then as soon as I said it, then that's when the announcer said it, you know. But, I think, you know, for Khan to be so good, like, physically, so, like, physically gifted, he don't use, like, hip motion. He don't use head motion, you know. Like, he did it for the first couple rounds, but, you know, I mean, you are who you are, so, and then that was his downfall. He don't, for him to have all that skill, he don't use foot movement, you know, and so the punch that landed on him, you know, Canelo threw that throwaway jab, and then he just, like, he wasn't really aiming for him, like, he just threw the jab because he, you know, it was like one of them type of punches where I'm throwing this and hopefully he in the lane where I throw it at, and so, you know, he wasn't even looking what he threw, which I understand, you know, that's how you throw punches, but yeah, and if he just used his body and his feet a little bit more, he could have got, you know, probably got caught on the end of it, or, you know, just not taking the full blow, but damn, his head was right in the path of where that punch was going, so that shit was, like, pretty bad, and, you know, of course he was out before he hit the ground, so, and then I'm sure he got another second concussion when he hit the mat. So, yeah, I mean, I thought he fought a good fight. Yeah, he needs to be commended for stepping up. But I guess this kind of confirmed what everybody else was saying, like, you know, they shouldn't have had this fight. But, you know, had he just done better, like, foot movement and stuff, as defense, instead of just using the normal hands up and I stay still defense, I think the fight would have been more competitive. Definitely Canelo would have won eventually, like, you know, because you could see Canelo getting sort of stronger. You know, his like, methodical pace was winning out, opposed to Khan's pace, which was you know, dimming. And then, you know, the inevitable obviously happened. So I guess it's going to happen eventually. But it was a good fight while it lasted.
Yeah, I mean, it was a little bit of a, you know, to me, Canelo was pretty much trying to catch Amir Khan for most of the fight. And it was like I was saying, for, you know, about a few rounds here and there, Khan was having a little bit of success with his jab and trying to reach out to get to Canelo and connecting on a couple of combinations. But once, you know, Canelo was starting to get more success with that right hand, it was pretty much a matter of time before Alvarez was going to get that big right hand that he pretty much wanted to score with. And that was basically the end of that. Real quick here, we got another caller in. Area code 813, what's going on with you?
What up, though, fellas? This is Terrell Hall from Tampa, just checking in.
Hey, what's going on, Terrell?
Hey. Yeah, just coming on the tail end of your conversation, I mean, it's a fight that week that had a lot of potential, particularly if Khan could have won the fight. Obviously, at this point, we know that Khan didn't win the fight. And his main vice that has played him for years has certainly come up to bite him in the butt again with that clear and decisive knockout that we all witnessed. Am I surprised by it? No, not necessarily. I mean, like I said before, going ahead, I did give Khan a decent chance. One of my main points going into the fight, I thought the fact that Khan, despite the fact that he's moved up in weight, he did have a good frame to carry additional weight. Now, another point I made too, at the weigh-in, Canelo, of course, was superbly ripped. Khan was noticeably a little more bloated than you normally would see him at a weigh-in. I've seen previous Khan weigh-ins where he's ripped as well, but this one, not so much. He just had regular conditioning, it looked like. I'm not saying he was out of shape, but compared to the sharpness that you're accustomed to seeing Khan in, that wasn't the case at the weigh-in. So perhaps that was a telltale sign that he didn't belong at this weight. But just going to the fight again, it was a clear and a perfect punch, well-timed punch. And like I said, Khan's jaw has come into play again. And at this point, that's going to be his vice throughout his career. Regardless of what way he fights, regardless of whoever he fights, we already know what to look for. You know, that's nothing new with this fight with Khan. Canelo, I mean, he did what he had to do. He did what he had to do, you know. So the main thing with Canelo is going forward, what's next? That's the question that needs to be answered pretty much right away with the fact that Triple G is a mandatory member. So that's a question that has to be answered right now.
Yeah. I mean, we have, you know, Gennady Golovkin right there, and he's basically waiting for Canelo to step up to fight him. And while, you know, Canelo and this team is pretty much, you know, saying, yeah, bring it on and whatnot, does it still have those stipends that were pretty much established years before this potential fight was going to take place? And that is, like we all said, that catch weight of 155 pounds. And so it's seeming like is Gennady Golovkin and his team willing to accept that catch weight, or just saying that, you know, the fight has to be at a 160-pound weight limit? We had Golovkin, who's, you know, pretty much fought at around, you know, 157, 158 pounds, or weighed in at 157, 158 pounds, and, you know, kind of like fought, you know, above that, like 170, 172, maybe once he hits the ring. So it's pretty much a point of rehydration in reference to this potential thing here with Canelo Alvarez and Gennady Golovkin. So pretty much going to wait and see what's going to happen with that. But it was like I was saying, I don't think that Oscar De La Hoya is willing to put Canelo in the ring with Gennady Golovkin at this point, because, like I said, it's too much of a risk financially for Golden Boy Promotions to have their lead guy go into a fight that, you know, he could potentially lose and potentially lose badly. So I pretty much have an alternate for it. I would suggest on that instance, but I'm going to see if any of y'all have any response. I'm going to start with Mike Grady on it.
Yeah, so I think that they said that they weren't, they know Khan was going to have the speed, so they were visibly working on bulking Khan up and working on Khan's strength going into the fight. So that's why he looked so, you know, puffy, because they weren't working on speed per se, because they knew they would have a speed advantage, but they were just working on power, which I think, you know, starting out the fight, it helped, because, you know, Canelo was looking, I don't say he was looking frustrated, but, you know, he definitely was looking like, damn, this boy came to fight, you know, in the first few rounds. But then that steam got let off a ton, and, yeah, he just caught up with him, but I don't have any, like, rebuttals or anything.
I'm gonna speak towards the catchweight thing. If you gonna give this guy, you're saying this guy is a pound for pound king, top five, whatever he is, or whatever you consider him to be. Why should there be a weight restriction on his opponent? If you're as good as you say you are, why is there weight restriction? There should be none. If you defending the middleweight championship, there should be no weight. No weight stipulation at all. And if these people are saying that he came in at 170 or 180, what's the point of making a weight restriction unless you're trying to bring the opponent at a disadvantage? If you guys can meet at a certain point, then it will help. But you guys are the same weight, the same size. You're coming in a fight in the ring 170, 180, but you want somebody else to drop down, 4 pounds, but you're not even willing to drop down 1 pound just to fight a junior middleweight. The stipulations are crazy to have to do this. And I think for me, if Triple G, he's in a position to hold out, because at some point these Mexican fans or all these fans are going to realize, Canelo has to really step up. Fighting guys, even if you bring Lemieux down, he's going to have to, take a leg off, because I don't even think he can get down to 155. So all this illusion about people coming down for the money, these guys they're already struggling with weight. Lemieux has had issues with struggling weight. These guys have had issues with struggling with weight. So just to say that, 4 pounds is nothing, that's crazy. If you're at the best, the best physical fitness of your life, in the best position of your life, those pounds are hard to come off. So you can't just say, oh, it's easy to drop 4 pounds. It's nothing. And you cannot, and these people out here just keep comparing what B-Hop did with Oscar and what Floyd did to other people. That is, you cannot compare fighters to fighters. Not everybody can make, have the same body type in the same situation to be able to make these weights. And I think it's not fair for you to put a stipulation on fighters, but you say right. That you're that great. So that's my position on it.
So I'm not opposed to it, because I think it's like the art of war. Like, Canelo knows that, he can make the weight, and other people making the weight pretty much hinders them. So, advantage Canelo. I mean, yeah, it's not right. Yeah, it's kind of like a cheap way, but, I mean, shit, if I'm fighting somebody, I mean, yeah, the warrior in me would want them to be at their best, and I beat them at their best, and, that would be that whole psychological thing, but, taking chance and stuff, I would rather have had a deck, the path of least resistance, lined up in the best favor for me before I get in there. I want every, seat to be in the same direction, and yeah, it's cheap, but I don't take away when he's fighting for, like, livelihood and, fighting to get himself a competitive advantage.
So you're pretty much going at it. So in response to that, so you're pretty much going at it like some of these notable fights where the challenger had to make concessions in order to fight the champion. Like, for example, if you had Oscar De La Hoya and Floyd Mayweather, so Floyd Mayweather had to, wear certain gloves and, do a couple of things with tape maybe or whatnot, and so in order for him to take the fight. And I think they had something to that extent for the Mayweather-Pacquiao fight where, Pacquiao couldn't wear Reyes gloves or something like that. So this might be something to that same extent.
I mean, it's a competitive advantage for the champion. The champion, they should fight them on an equal playing field, but, I think they're going to do whatever they can to get themselves the best, deck of cards before the game even start. And then when the game start, you're drained, struggling to make weight, the fight will be off if you don't make weight type of thing. And, now I'm in much better, shape going forward, deeper into the fight than you are. It's cheap.
Right.
It is cheap. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, look at this. You guys know about this. When Mayweather fought Marquez, right? Mayweather didn't make the weight for the fight. I believe he gave it to Belt. I believe so, correct me if I'm wrong. But at the same time, so he didn't drain himself to get all the way down to the weight. And from that point, he gave Marquez money because of him not making a weight. Now, I mean, Mayweather would have beat Marquez anyway. I think so. I think we all would agree to that. But because he didn't have to drain down, he wasn't at that as much as a competitive advantage that gave him a definitive advantage in the ring. And we all know that. Now, God save me, because I didn't see the fight last night from Con Canelo. If you could refresh me on Canelo's interview when posed with the possibility of fighting Triple G, because with Canelo, he's virtually been all over the map from the point where he says that fight, or we heard from De La Hoya, that fight needs to simmer first to cook up so he can basically get more money. He doesn't want to fight him yet. He's not ready yet, things like that. And then he's also said, I'm ready. So what did Canelo say in regards to being posed with the question for the fight last night?
Before y'all touch on that, I just want to say one thing. In any of these fights that you guys go back and you look at these catch weight stuff, these fights are never competitive. You go back to Ward and Dawson. You go back to Marquez and Mayweather. These fights, Pacquiao and Oscar, these fights are never competitive because they're not fair. Yes, you get an advantage, but the fights aren't competitive, and they aren't indicative of what the real outcome could have been if both guys were at 100%. I get the disadvantage and I get all that, but you're not making competitive fights now. So therefore, when Canelo, let's say he beats Triple G at 155, then he doesn't get the respect that he would have got if you would have beat him at 160. So, or even not even at 160, even if you compromise to 157. So you get these uncompetitive fights, and then you don't get a fair result. You don't get the true result of something because you're making these concessions. That's the point I'm trying to make.
I see on that instance, yeah. I mean, you want to have these fighters, you know, have full credit to beating their opponent at their weight class, you know, not, you know, relegating them to a specific weight that is in a weight, you know, within a weight limit. I mean, for example, here with this 155 pounds, you know, that's not a specific weight limit. 160 pounds is a middleweight limit, but you could, you know, fight for the middleweight championship at any weight below 160, no matter what it is. But if Canelo, you know, still holds to that point of fighting Gennady Golovkin at 155 pounds, and that pretty much would kind of like put him at an advantage to a certain extent because, I mean, we haven't seen Gennady Golovkin weigh in at 155 pounds before a fight.
So, Warren, I have a question. How much credit does one get in a competitive fight that they lose over a fight that's non-competitive that they win, that they pretty much – you know, get all the stipulations in their favor? Which one you think is the best case for the fighter who has the power in setting the catch weight?
Well, I'm not pro concession, but I'm pro weight concession. So you can have all the gloves and all that. You can have all that. I don't care too much about that. But when you tell a person who's never been at a certain weight to try to get down to a certain weight, and you expect that guy to, not that, but the fans will expect him to be in optimal shape. That's just not a fair comparison. At least let Triple G get to 155 in a fight previously to that. That's just where I'm at. But to answer your question, if you beat a guy at his peak, you know, with no weight restriction, that's the credit. That's credit. You're not. I'm just looking at weight restrictions. Did you beat the best of that guy? Was he at his best? Is there any complications to whatever happened? So the Mayweather-Pacquiao fight, to me, there's no questions. Mayweather did what he's supposed to do despite what Pacquiao said after the fight. Those guys, there was no restrictions, you know, to weight or anything stopping Pacquiao from being at his best.
So if a person, you know, fights a person at their best and they loses, is that better than fighting a person where you do have concessions and weight and you win? Which scenario do you think is better for the fighter?
If Canelo came at middleweight and lost to Triple G, I respect him more than beating Triple G at 155. That's just my opinion.
I agree with that as well.
But as far as money and marketability and, you know, the grand scheme of boxing and stuff, which one you think is better, though?
Oh, no, I'm with you, but it's not boxing. It's business. And that's when you turn it into something else. You're not making competitive fights. You're just trying to, like I said, force feed an A-side. That's all you're doing. That's why you get the Con Canelo, because you're trying to force feed an A-side instead of naturally making him.
That's exactly what I was ready to comment on as well, as far as who's the A-side and B-side in Canelo Triple G. And at this point, it's definitely Canelo. It's Canelo. And basically at this point, we got a little mini war being waged between the two camps on who's going to budge first and who's going to give up the most concessions. That's what's going on. And in the meanwhile, we have to wait it out and see what happens.
Mm-hmm. Pretty much, it's like, you know, who in these negotiations is going to be the one that is going to back down first. In reference to these fight negotiations, and the thing about it is that I don't see either one of them kind of like, you know, buzzer backing down in that case. And so with that being said, I mean, I doubt that this fight between Canelo and Golovkin will happen around September or October, which is, you know, what, you know, somewhere trying to expect that it would be around. And with that being the case, if the WBC ends up ordering Canelo to fight Triple G by that time, and if not, they will strip Canelo of that championship, then most likely he'll just go ahead and give up that championship. You know, they still have him as the title of lineal middleweight champ, so he pretty much may not care if the WBC strips him or not. He would still be regarded as the lineal middleweight champion and move on to fighting, you know, at 155 pounds or whatever it is. And it just may be against trying to see if they could strip down David Lemieux, because David Lemieux was able to get a TKO victory over Glenn Tapia in that same card for a vacant minor middleweight championship. So he was able to get back in the win column and be at 34-3 against Glenn Tapia. So, which, I mean, I kind of like see this particular fight happening, because at first when they were saying that Canelo Alvarez was going to be headlining the card in May, you know, pretty much in May 7th, I thought it was going to be against David Lemieux at first. Because, I mean, David Lemieux was under Golden Boy Promotions. I thought, I actually originally thought that he was going to be the next guy for Canelo, you know, right after Canelo defeated Cotto for that middleweight championship. So if you see an announcement that Alvarez is fighting Lemieux for that lineal middleweight championship, don't be surprised at all, because I pretty much kind of see that, you know, happening here in the future. Well, I'm going to start here with Terrell. What's your thoughts about what's going to happen with lineal middleweight championship here with Alvarez, and if you think that Lemieux is a more viable option here at this point? Looks like Terrell kind of like got cut out there. So I'm going to get to Mike Grady on it.
Do I think Lemieux? Yeah, I think Lemieux is the best option. Lemieux will tell us if Canelo even need to waste his time to fight with Golovkin, which he should beat Lemieux. And, you know, I think their fight will be competitive. So I think Lemieux is probably the best fight for him at this point to lead into the next fight to beat Golovkin, yeah. I don't know. Tapia was just, you know, fed to the wolves. Dang, man, he just, you know, I think this guy needs to stop boxing, you know, because if they're going to keep putting him in with these guys who just beat him up, like, I guess we're not talking about the fight, so I'll stop talking about the fight. But I think Lemieux it should be the next person. I think that's the best logical step because Golovkin is not going to happen, at least not now.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, it's like we pretty much know what David Lemieux's limits are. So I think he's pretty much reached his peak there in that particular middleweight division. You know, so World Rake, what you got to say about David Lemieux?
Lemieux, he looked good yesterday. Glenn Tappy was moving up in weight. I just don't think Lemieux can make that 155. I think I've always went back to the Rubio fight he had. He was struggling to make weight. I don't think that's a reasonable fight for 155. Now, if Canelo chooses to go to 160, he probably would. I still think he's going to fight Triple G. I think the pressure's on him now. I think what he said after the fight will put more pressure on him because he's basically saying that he's ready now. So if they make another fight, I don't think it'll look good on him. The only fight I can see at 155 is Andy Lee. And the only reason why I say that is because Andy Lee has a history of going back down the junior middleweight. So he's fought at 154 fairly recently. So I can see them going that angle if they want to stay 155.
Mm-hmm.
Lemieux is still an option out there. But, you know, a good fight for Lemieux would be Steven. That would be a good fight be an undercard fight.
Yeah, undercard middleweight fight there between David Lemieux there and Curtis Stevens. You'd probably see, like, where both of those guys are as far as their careers at the middleweight division. What is that again there, Mike?
I said, do you think they would put Canelo in with Stevens?
Nah, I don't think so. I mean, we already saw a version of that there when Canelo fought. Who is it? Who he fought in Houston?
Kirkland.
Yeah. We already saw that when Canelo fought Kirkland last year. So I don't think they're going to have a repeat of that. By having Canelo Alvarez going up against Curtis Stevens, especially at this point. I think that's one of the last people that, you know, boxing fight fans and pundits like would have Canelo fight at this juncture. So, yeah, I don't necessarily see that one happening. I'm trying to figure out, like, what else. Oh! Here's another, maybe a potential one. What if you had, like, a fight between Canelo Alvarez and Billy Joe Saunders?
Yeah, I wouldn't be interested in that. For me, Canelo, it should be Triple G. I can't, maybe I'll accept Jacobs, you know. I'll accept Lemieux, too. But Billy Joe Saunders, I can't see it.
Yeah, I don't think. I don't know about a potential fight between Canelo and Jacobs happening anytime soon. I think that, you know, Oscar is still at odds with Al Haymon, so any of Haymon's guys, he's going to try to, you know, stay away from. Those guys there. So I'm not certain that a Jacobs fight with Canelo Alvarez would be possible. Maybe with Golovkin, because we had Golovkin's win over Dominic Wade, and Dominic Wade is a Haymon managed guy with Sam Watson over there ringside behind Dominic Wade back there in April, what was that, April 23rd when they fought. So that might be more of a potential thing happening there. All right, just getting here with about 5 minutes left within the live show. For those listening in on Blog Talk Radio through the MRN Broadcasting Channel, if you want to get in and talk live, it's 347-237-5539. That is 347-237-5539. Seeing here, Terrell may have gotten back on the line. You back on?
Yes, Sam. Thank you, guys.
Yeah. Yeah, we were talking about potential fights there in the middleweight division. We have maybe Canelo fighting David Lemieux next if he's not fighting Golovkin. Or I was thinking about a potential fight between Canelo and Billy Joe Saunders, which could be, you know, either here stateside or overseas in England. And I got like a couple of thoughts on that, but what do you think is like any other potential options for Canelo Alvarez if he doesn't fight Gennady Golovkin?
Well, I mean, I know you said that Lemieux just fought this past weekend on that same card, and he secured some type of belt as well. I mean, but put it like this, Lemieux has one loss, right, from Triple G?
Right. He has one loss from Triple G, but you know what I'm saying? He had like a few losses before earlier in his career.
Yeah, I think he got three.
Okay.
Yeah.
So my thing about this for Lemieux, me personally, or let me speak from the team's perspective, his team, if I was on his team, I'm not necessarily trying to rush you back to the top-tier opponents right now. You suffered a horrible loss. You came back and got and secured a good win. Good for you. But to push him back in there with a top-tier guy and having those – and I'm not saying that Canelo would beat him down. I'm not saying that. But just that the amount of pressure on him to win that fight, I'm not sure from his team if I will push him into that fight. You know, so going forward, Billy Joe Saunders, that's a relatively safe fight for Canelo. Yes, it is. Is it makeable? Sure, I'm certain. I bet it is because Saunders wants to go over here stateside and do some work over here and get his name put out over here. But aside from Saunders and Lemieux, what about the Charlo boys? Why can't one of these guys emerge from these ranks and fight him? What about a Lara fight? Lara beat Canelo's older brother. That's a marketable fight. And going forward with that, every Canelo fight going forward does not have to be on pay-per-view. He does not demand that yet. He does not command that yet. So, there has to be some other guys that has to be able to separate themselves this year, this summer, in order to command a Canelo fight. I mean, is Canelo the top guy in boxing right now? Maybe. But if some guys like a Charlo boy or a Lara could get some definitive wins and put themselves right there in the middle of things, they can't command they can't command a Canelo fight. You know, like I said, it doesn't necessarily have to be on pay-per-view either. There's names out there. We just need to move on to them, you know.
Yeah, exactly. It's just, you know, which potential fight would be able to be the most marketable for Canelo Alvarez? You know, as they're trying to, like, see if they could just, you know, put him in at pay-per-view level fights from here on out. So if it's going to be, you know, a pay-per-view level fight, then I doubt that he'll be fighting the likes of a David Lemieux on a pay-per-view or a like a Curtis Stevens or something like that. It's got to be somebody to where it brings a lot of appeal within the boxing community in the States and Mexico and then possibly overseas. That's why I kind of like propose Billy Joe Saunders, because Billy Joe Saunders has that English following behind him. And so that potential fight could, you know, get pay-per-view buys not only here in North America, but also over in England as well. So that's why I kind of like propose that. All right. Go ahead.
I was going to ask you guys, would any of you guys buy that fight, though? Because I wouldn't.
What fight?
The Billy Joe Saunders fight.
No. That's what I said before, that Canelo doesn't necessarily command a pay-per-view fight every fight going forward. He doesn't. I wouldn't buy it. There's no way I would buy the fight.
That's not a.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, I don't think he does either. But I mean, in order to do something where you have like those pay per view level fights, you have to get to a point where either you're, you know, liked by everybody or hated by everybody. And, you know, that is what gets productive pay-per-view sales in these fights, main event fights. That's why, you know, Oscar De La Hoya was able to, you know, get a lot of people interested because he was very marketable as a fighter there. And then Floyd Mayweather took over as part of the villain role and just carried that over to, you know, be successful from, you know, that point forward. So if you know, these fighters don't have one or the other, then it won't really work as far as, like, having overall pay-per-view success. I mean, I think that's one of the main differences between a guy like Oscar De La Hoya, who had crossover appeal with, you know, fans in Mexico and fans in the United States, and with Canelo Alvarez, as Canelo Alvarez is only, you know, catering towards the, you know, Mexicans there and can't really cross over to a lot of the English-speaking boxing fans because he doesn't speak English. So I think that's one of the things that kind of, like, hinders him as far as his overall marketability in the sport of boxing. All right. Now, just getting here, you know, getting here into the overtime section of this show, I'm going to talk about a couple of topics here and there, starting with, you know, a rumor that came out over the week as the lead-up to this Canelo-Khan fight that was happening at the T-Mobile arena there in Las Vegas, Nevada. You had somebody else out there that was kind of interested in fighting there at that T-Mobile arena, and that guy's Floyd Mayweather. And for some reason they said that he was considering coming back to the sport to fight one more fight. As I said, they really don't have that much interest in any of those guys that they were potentially messing up against, particularly guys like Danny Garcia or Keith Thurman or anybody like that. So they were trying to figure out what would be something that would potentially get him that, I think it was, he was trying to get to, you know, 8 or 9 figures in this fight. As his last, you know, fights or a couple of fights there, you know, brought him about $35 to $50 million up front, and then, you know, more money after that coming from the pay-per-view sale. So they actually tried to throw out a hint that he would potentially fight McGregor in a fight over at the T-Mobile Arena in September. So they were potentially looking at that, seeing if that is going to come to fruition and take place. And when I first read about that, I thought that was very outrageous because at one point, while that, you know, they were talking about if that fight would potentially happen, but then, you know, McGregor went up against Jose Aldo in the MMA fight and pretty much got choked out. So all of that talk kind of, like, you know, pretty much fizzled out and died down. And so nobody really thought that, you know, anything like that would potentially take place. But with the overall marketability of McGregor, Conor McGregor, and Floyd Mayweather, you know, both, you know, having a, you know, villain role and a hero role to some people, and others, maybe it's a villain role for the opposite, that if they were able to get in the ring at some point or a certain extent, that would, you know, bring overall pay-per-view success. So I'm not sure if it will or not, but that's what's been thrown out there. So first, what I'm going to do is I'm going to start with Terrell on this potential thing coming up, or, you know, what was thrown out there.
Yeah, I saw an article that proposed that fight between Mayweather and Ian McGregor, whatever the guy's name is, for MMA. I mean, first of all, my first thought as a boxing purist, I mean, I have tons of respect for MMA guys, women and guys alike. I'm a former wrestler, still love wrestling, the Olympic wrestling style, college wrestling style, even high school wrestling style. So, I mean, MMA is just an offset of that. But at my heart, I'm a pure boxing purist. That's where I'm at. So for this to happen, number one, this is a business, all right? So for McGregor and Mayweather to fight, I'm looking at the business side first, because that's the only logical reason this fight would be made, so it can make money and generate the most amount of money. And truthfully, it would. I know it would, because you're talking about capturing all of the MMA fans into the pay-per-view numbers, and along with the boxing fans. And you're talking about pitting two separate groups of fans one against one another, which is going to generate interest, tons of interest from both sides to want to buy that pay-per-view fight. The actual fight itself, very interesting, actually. McGregor brings in a ton of aggression. I mean, but we have so many cases already now where we've seen Mayweather fought an ultra-aggressive fighter, Haddon. My most perfect example would be Haddon. Haddon came in ultra-aggressive, trying to rough him up in a sense and just cuff the corners and stuff like that, but we know Mayweather's skill set allows for him to stay calm in the pocket, fire back, adjust, and from that point, get in his angles and fire off on his opponent and beat him down. Mm-hmm. So for this potential fight, it's very interesting for so many other reasons outside the ring than rather inside the ring. So, I mean, would I buy that fight? I probably would, just from the intrigue alone. I probably would.
Yeah, I mean, that, you know, that's the thing that, you know, I think Floyd Mayweather was pretty much trying to get here with this potential fight. I mean, he's, you know, he said something, you know, to that effect, where he said a potential fight between him and Conor McGregor, that it would be possible. And this is, you know, under basically his, I wouldn't say his website, but kind of like his thing where he goes to do videos, and that's through Fight Hype. Because a lot of the videos that come up for Floyd Mayweather that are on YouTube are pretty much through Fight Hype. So I think there is something where he kind of like, you know, proposed to you know, CBS and Showtime, if there's like a potential fight where he could get nine figures, and that, you know, it would bring a lot of attention towards you know, the network, whoever would go ahead and cover it. And I think that's the only fight that I think, you know, CBS and Showtime kind of like said, okay, this could potentially, you know, get the amount of pay-per-view success that you're kind of looking for. So I think that's the only reason why he, you know, went on ahead to try to get those trademarks for TB50 or TMT50, which was like the Oprah that previous week. All right, I'm going to go to World Ranked on this potential thing here.
I think it's for the figures. I think it makes sense for the money aspect, for the business side. But I think it kind of make a mockery out of the sport. I just think to have Floyd count that as his 50th win, I think that makes boxing, to me, that much of a joke to the public for that. But there's interest there. You know, there's money to be made there in that avenue. But, yeah, it could be a big show. You know, it can make the money that he's asking for. So, in that sense, it would make sense.
Yeah, now, if there was a way to kind of like combine the two sports, I'm not sure with McGregor if he's, you know, on good terms with Dana White after what went on after his fight with Diaz. But there's a way that they could get, you know, a couple of undercard fights in, you know, something with, you know, a couple boxing matches in there and a couple of MMA matches in there, and then just headline it with Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather, then that may, you know, potentially have it to where both fighters of, fans of both sports could come together for that fight card at the T-Mobile Arena. So I think that's something that, you know, I think Floyd Mayweather is trying to tap into from the MMA scene. If he's trying to, you know, say if he's trying to sign fighters in mixed martial arts, then he may want to feature them in this potential thing there in September of this year. All right, Mike, what you got? What's your thoughts on it?
I mean, it's creative and it sounds very creative, but I do agree that it does sound like a mockery of the sport. And so, yeah, would that even be sanctioned as a real boxing match? Because the dude, would he even be able to get sanctioned as a boxer?
That's the other thing is that, I mean, they're going to be able to sanction it. And that's why it might be like some type of an exhibition, because I don't think a boxing organization would be able to, you know, accept having a guy that's pretty much would be his first professional fight in the sport of boxing. So I don't think the Nevada State Athletic Commission would be able to sign off on something like that.
Yeah, so I agree. The only way this would work if this was an exhibition, and it wouldn't be 50, it would just be a money fight, and he would fight whoever for the 50 and not make no money. Hopefully do it on free TV.
Well, maybe it would be free TV, but I doubt that.
Yeah, I don't think so either, but, you know, wishful thinking.
Right. You know, So that's the thing there. It's just something that we probably got to look to see what happens in reference to that case as far as how that's going to shape up. I think that's, you know, something that's in the next few weeks or so. We're going to get more details of what Floyd Mayweather is pretty much going to be doing in reference to that. So that's something to look at. Just going to move through here. Actually, there might be some fights on tonight on Bounce TV, so I may be able to check that out. They're having a fight card actually down the road from down the road from y'all over there in Lakeland. So, got a couple of junior middleweights fighting and a few featherweight fights. So, Bounce TV may be able to see something there in reference to that. And I think Tokyo had a fight there with Naoya Inoue for his junior bantamweight championship. So I think he's already fought here earlier today. I have to see if I check that out and see if there's any results in reference to that. Yeah, I'm looking here. Yeah, he pretty much did just fight over in Japan and went to defend his WBO Super Flyweight Championship. But there are some fights on Bounce TV tonight, so if y'all want, y'all can check that out. We have a couple of things here coming up. Next week, May 13th, we have a card over in the D.C. Armory, headlined by Dusty Hernandez Harrison, who's going to be fighting Michael Dallas Jr. So we will have, another fight card at the D.C. Armory, as we've had like a few, like three there already since March 5th. So D.C. Armory, like I was saying, in the past previous shows, has been a very busy venue that's bringing in a lot of boxing events right there. Just see it here. It should be in a few weeks. We should have that heavyweight championship fight between Deontay Wilder and Alexander Povetkin. And also, later on in the day, we're going to have three championship fights, as Lara will be facing Baines again, Baines Machilsian again, and Jermell Charlo will be fighting John Jackson for the WBC 154-pound title. And Jermell Charlo defends his version of that title against Austin Trout. So come in the next couple of weeks, we're going to have a few good number of big fights to be talking about in this sport. So anybody want to chime in on any of those fights? Just anything to add in?
Well, I'll just say initially, I know this is only May, but for the Deontay Wilder Povetkin fight, I know this fight's for this year that had not been made yet. But this fight is a fight that I'm going to be have been waiting for. Well, I'll say this. This is the best fight I want to see this entire year. I'll say that already. I'll say it right now. And the reason why we talked about Wilder time and time again on the show, we talked about his body of work, his opponent selection from Duhapis to people like that. We talked about his record. We talked everything about Wilder. And for me as a fan, I want Wilder to be everything he wants to be. I do. I want a great American heavyweight champion. I want one.
Don't say but. Don't say but.
Well, like I said, I want him to be everything he wants to be. And if we can have that, then we certainly have something. I mean, to go over to Russia and to beat a Povetkin fighter, Olympic fighter, I mean, it's almost like, what more do you want him to do to say that he's legitimate? So that's the fight I want. I almost want to say I'll have to do another fight all year if I can just see that fight and have him win. And of course, I can't say that, but that's probably what I think, probably.
Yeah, to me, I mean, this right here for Deontay Wilder is a very big fight for him. I think that if he's able to go into Moscow against a guy like Alexander Povetkin and score the win against Povetkin, especially if he's able to do it in convincing fashion, then it would show that he would be, you know, potentially, if not the best heavyweight out there. I think Povetkin, to me, is probably number two, pretty much like number two or number three in the heavyweight division right now, with the alternate of Tyson Fury or Vladimir Klitschko sitting as the best in the division right now. But if Deontay Wilder can go into foreign territory and score the win there against Alexander Povetkin, then that puts him at the level of the best heavyweight in the sport, by according to many. That's how I feel on that. You got any thoughts on that, World Rank?
Yeah, I give the champ credit. I give Wilder credit. I give him credit for going over to Russia. I didn't think he was going to do it. I actually thought he was going to vacate the title. So I give him all the credit in the world just for going over there and defending his title in a hostile environment. Like I spoke to earlier, I give guys credit for taking the challenges no matter win or loss. So he gains a lot of points in my book for taking the challenge.
We'll pretty much get into that fight a little bit more here next week on the show. But as for now, I'm going to basically close it out for this week. You know, we'll have the show coming up here again next week, same time, Sunday, 7:30 p.m. Eastern time. And be sure to catch the sister show that we have out there, the Cold Hard Truth on Sports, every Tuesday night at 8:30 here on the MRN Broadcasting Channel. And also the Cold Hard Truth on Sports that's on Wednesday nights here at 8:30 p.m. Hosted by Cali Mike, Michael Brewer there. So when you can, check out those shows and listen to them. Listen to the podcast on the Cold Hard Truth on Sports site on Blog Talk Radio. So with that being said, I'm going to close this out and get back to my quote-unquote vacation wrapping up here. And we'll get back into it next week. Like I say at the end of every show, the point of boxing is to hit and not get hit, not to stand and trade. And on that note, folks, I'm out. Have a good one.
You too, man.